You're listening to Trucking Questions from the Audio Road with Kevin Rutherford. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. You can ask questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, tax, technology, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the Audio Road.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about business of trucking. We take your calls and we answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, you name it, we'll talk about it. This show is all about helping you be a better you, and we wrap it all around the trucking lifestyle. You know, we don't always stop to think about how fortunate we are as an industry, trucking, to have our own channel on satellite radio that you can hear anywhere in the country, anytime, anywhere in the continent almost. We have a lot of Canadian listeners. I've gotten a couple calls from Mexico. Sometimes it's just good to stop and think how fortunate we are to have this resource. And are we taking advantage of the resource? And there are so many other ideas I have, but I'd love to be able to come on the air and share, you know, knowing that no matter where you are, you can tune in and listen. And I want to keep doing that. But this show really is about so many things, but it's directed and geared towards the trucking lifestyle, which is very, very different. It just is. You know, it is one of the few, there are a couple others, but it's one of the few career choices, business opportunities that have such a different lifestyle to them. Being on the road is a real change from the way most people live, and that creates a lot of challenges. And in the past, there haven't been many resources that really target this lifestyle. And that's one of the things that we've always tried to do, identify the problems. There are problems and the challenges of living and working on the road, and then finding solutions and bringing those solutions to you. And if we can't find a solution, I've committed to the fact that if we can create it, we'll create it. I have been talking a lot, not a lot, but I've been talking about health in the last 6 months. And I'm going to continue talking about health. But there is some really, really good news. You know, health has been an issue for a very long time. I mean, come on, we've been, you know, my whole life, 50-some years, there's always been talk about, you know, weight and diets and health and sickness and disease, and it seems to get worse over time. And it really is. It is getting much worse. Change that it's getting worse is getting faster and faster. I mean, if you start to look at the health statistics in this country, it is scary, really scary. Children under 10 with type 2 diabetes, we need to stop calling it adult onset because it isn't anymore. It is lifestyle-created diabetes. That's the word I think we should start using, lifestyle-created diabetes. You created the conditions in your life, or your parents created the conditions in your life that created the diabetes. It is not a natural state. It's not genetic. You didn't pick up a germ. Well, maybe you did. You might have picked up some bacteria that has led to this. But it is lifestyle created. Now, the good news is, on the health front, and I have now, I went back and looked, I have read over 30,000 pages of research on this. The latest cutting-edge research, new stuff, stuff I have never heard before. Doctors are not really being trained in any of this. It's that new. Now, most of the research is coming from some of the top medical institutions. This isn't, you know, snake oil. This isn't, you know, fraud, or this is good medical science, but it's not widespread. You're not going to see the average doctor talking about this. I don't know if you will in 5 or 10 years or not, mostly because the pharmaceutical industry seems to be controlling the entire medical field. They seem to be controlling what you see on TV, what the doctors are seeing, what the doctors are pushing, and what the doctors are selling. And if they continue to maintain that control, you may not hear about any of this stuff unless you go looking for it. But here is the really good news. Let's just talk about weight for a while, because weight is one of the first things that triggers many of the other problems. Weight has been such a big issue. Now, I could make an analogy between diet, weight gain, and that whole topic, and fuel mileage. Kind of a strange analogy, but when we look at fuel mileage in many ways is extremely complicated. I've said it before, this is not an easy subject. There are so many variables going on. The outside air temperature, the humidity, the aerodynamics of the truck, the rolling resistance, the tires, the drivers, the engine, pavement, the freight, the trailer, on and on and on. We've identified well over 80 different things that can affect fuel economy, and they all affect it together. So there is no clear answer. You can't say this is the perfect temperature, because it would depend on all the other factors changing, or these are the perfect tires because it would depend on all the other factors, or this is the best modification. So in some ways, fuel mileage is extremely complicated, and it can sometimes be frustrating to try to help somebody, because after 20 years of studying fuel mileage a lot, I'm still learning stuff constantly. So how do you get all of that information across to somebody? Well, in fuel mileage, I figured out we don't have to. You don't have to know all of this stuff to improve your fuel mileage. What it takes is somebody who knows all of those variables and then puts it into some common sense approaches to making improvements. Will it be perfect? No, of course not. But who cares about perfect? All I really care about is improvement. Let's just improve a little bit all the time, small increments, and set a goal to just keep doing that. And you know what? Look at the show. If you've listened for a long time, you've heard the people that call in and say, this truck used to get 5.6 and now it gets 8.2. We have some extreme cases where we have taken trucks from a lifetime average in the fives all the way to the nines. That is an incredible improvement. That didn't come easy. It came with years of trial and error and upgrades and modifications, changes and fixes. But so what that it took that long? Look at the results. Isn't that better than saying, well, 5 years ago I was at 5.7 and I'm still at 5.7? So even though fuel mileage can be extremely or is extremely complicated in one sense, we've been able to make it very simple to improve it. Not easy, because you have to do the work, you have to make the investment, you have to try and sometimes fail, but we've given people a clear path those improvements. And we've said many times, not everything we say works for everybody. It's not that easy. But the things that we have proven many, many times over the years that work, try them. Figure out what works for you. Track your fuel mileage. And we know now that all that stuff works. We have 10,000 examples of how we've been able to improve fuel mileage and the benefits that we've achieved by doing that. There are so many analogies with that and our health. Our health is, if we think fuel mileage is complicated, and it is, our health and our bodies are about 100 times more complicated, and that is not an exaggeration. I wish that I would have been doing this kind of intensive research for the last 20 years, although I'm not sure that it would have done a lot of good, because we are really in a new era right now of health and fitness information. So maybe it's just all good timing. I've been involved in health virtually my whole life. My first business was a gym. I've been a coach. I know a lot about weight loss because of wrestling. But what I've learned in the last 6 months far outshadows everything I've learned in the previous 30 years. The good news is you can make amazing changes in your health, fitness, and weight. And it's much easier than we've thought in the past. And it works. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that when we get back. Then we're going to get to your calls, and you're going to hear more about this going forward. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. So here's the good news about weight. Let's just talk about weight. We think weight loss is this incredibly difficult thing to do. It must be difficult because everybody's trying and most people are failing. And many people have tried really hard their whole life to lose weight and they're not successful. So we start to feel like it's just not possible, or it would require so much willpower. We are just wrong. Once you learn this, and I'm not going to talk about it a lot more today, but I'm putting together a program. Once you learn this, it is so much easier than what we think and what we've seen. It is not about starving yourself. It is not about being hungry all the time. It is not about crazy amounts of exercise and hours in the gym or hours out walking or running. It is not about those things at all. It is about getting your diet right. And again, I'm not talking about calories. I'm not talking about being hungry. I'm not talking about depriving yourself of good food and eating when you want to eat and eating amounts that you would be surprised and still staying lean and losing weight. And I'm not talking about hours and hours in the gym or crazy intense exercise. I'm talking about being reasonably active. And there are some simple ways of doing that with barely changing your lifestyle. That's the good news. The bad news, most people still aren't going to do this. It requires thinking very differently, and it does require eating very differently. But I can tell you that if you can make the change, you will be amazed at how much you will be able to eat and that you won't have to be hungry to lose weight. In fact, being hungry is not a good thing. That is a sign that your body is not getting something it needs. When you get the diet right, you won't be hungry. You'll eat when you want to eat, and so many people have struggled with this. I think it is amazing that we now know. But we don't know everything yet. This is really, really new stuff. But we now know that you don't have to reduce calories to lose weight. In fact, the American diet, believe it or not, is actually lower in calories now than it was 10 years ago, and lower in calories than it was 20 years ago, and yet people keep gaining weight. It's not about calories. It's not about how much you eat. It's about what you eat. And you can eat really good food and lose weight. We're going to talk about that a lot more, so stay tuned for that. For now, we're going to get to the calls and see what it is you want to talk about. Let's head off to Texas. Adam, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Good afternoon. Just an update and a comment about your open. The update was I went and changed the 2 micron to a 6 micron on the FAST system. Okay. This is a weird thing, and I've asked a couple people and a couple guys that listen to the show and stuff. Does this make sense to you? Prior to having the system on there, the truck, I had the overhead ran and I did everything. It was relatively quiet. The truck runs really well. And once I put the FAST system on, it virtually doesn't even shake or rattle. It's a Freightliner, and it you can barely hear it when it's running. When I had that 2 micron on there, it sounded like I needed the overhead ran again. After I changed the filter, after your comment and suggestion yesterday, I went and changed it, and all that noise went away.
That does make sense. It really does. In order for the top end of that engine to function properly, and part of that noise is telling us that things are either off or they're working right, depending on what it sounds like. But a big part of the top end, a big part of that top end running correctly is the proper amount of fuel at the right pressure.
Right. So that does make sense. All right. It's definitely running a lot. It's running a lot smoother, anyways. I went instead of running, and I didn't know this, and maybe the listeners don't know this. Do you know what the micron size that FAST actually sends you with their filters? Do you know what that is?
No, I don't.
3.
Yes, yeah, I think that's too small.
Yeah,
I understand their thinking, and sometimes we just. And you know what? If you can put a 3 on and your truck runs good and fuel mileage is good, and let's say you try a 6 or an 8 or a 10 or something bigger, and there's no real change, well, then I would say go back to the 3. Because, and this is FAST's thinking, their mindset is they want to polish the fuel. They want it as clean as they can possibly get it. So a smaller micron filter will do that. But if we find... And that may be the case with your truck, and this is why we experiment, why we talk, why we share things, why we do this stuff. Because if we find that 2 or 3 micron filter is starving your engine for fuel, and we change it and things get better, it's kind of like some people, you know, can digest dairy. I'm going to do a health analogy again here, and other people can't. So, you know, dairy has a lot of good nutrients and vitamins, but if your body doesn't like it, then you need to go find those nutrients and vitamins somewhere else. Same thing here.
Right.
If your truck doesn't like that filter for whatever reason, we try another one and it works better. That's how we learn.
Right. And, you know, the thing for me on this situation and my fuel mileage, I'm a fanatic about it, but not as crazy as some, but... it's always on my mind and what I'm doing because of the miles I run. But I keep forgetting that when I got this truck, it was under 6 miles to the gallon, and it had issues. And, everything I've done to it, I'm pulling 79,000 pounds up and over mountains and climbing plenty of hills and still getting 7 miles to the gallon and getting pissed off about it. So... Sort of like what you said about being grateful.
Well, but that's a good thing. You know, there's a balance there. And here's what this is kind of hard to describe, but here's the way I like to do this. So when I get up in the morning, the first thing I do, I go through the whole, you know, quick kind of meditation, clear my mind, calm down, that kind of thing. Then I try to focus on 2 or 3 things that I'm really grateful for. But then, honestly... Once I go through that, you know, I feel grateful, and I really do it. But then I look around, and I try to find what I'm unsatisfied with. Doesn't that sound kind of crazy? I wake up and say, well, I'm so grateful for all this. It's beautiful. I love it. But then I look around and go, okay, what's wrong? What can I fix? And that's really kind of what you just described. You know, let's take a minute and say, hey, we're getting 7.2. That's fantastic. But I'm also pissed off because I think I could be getting 7.6. I think that's a good balance. Yeah.
Right. And I agree. I'm just, you know, with the new tires on there on the trailer and, you know, the fastback on and, you know, I'll call you back in another couple of weeks and see what might be next to do. And I'm just not even sure. But about your open, about what you said, it even goes deeper than your analogy compared to fuel mileage and health. Because, I mean, think about it. When you started truck driving, no one cared about fuel economy. And at about the same time, you probably wouldn't have taken as many supplements as you did knowing what you know now. But
doing the
gym stuff and, you know, how many people are out there still sucking way down like it's the best thing in the world. But the thing about it is, God bless you, you're just like most of us out here, you're obsessed and compulsive about things. And the funny thing about the health kick that you're on is, and I'm not knocking one way or the other, I think as long as it helps you and other people, it's great, but I think it's just it's not a fad as much as it is because of the internet. Now it's a billion-dollar industry. Billions.
Let me jump right in. Here's my biggest fear, is that some of this new research is leading towards how important our gut bacteria is. We're now really, really starting to see that. But here's where going to get screwed up. I can see it already. The big money is jumping in, and I'll give you a clear example of this. Philips, with their whole colon health thing, all their commercials all over the place, they are promoting a garbage probiotic. It's junk. It's not going to do anybody any good, but what people hear is they'll hear snippets of your gut bacteria is important. Your gut bacteria will help you lose weight. It'll fix your immune system. And then the next thing they hear is Philips Health, colon health. It'll, you know, it's probiotics. So the two messages sound like they make sense. It's not. They're going to screw this all up. They've screwed up the gluten-free thing. They're going to screw up the paleo thing. There will be a small group of people who will get it. And they'll get it right, and it will make life-changing differences. Across the population, not so much.
Right. And again, I'm not knocking what you're doing, but I also, in the same aspect, I can lose 10 or 15 pounds, but I'm not, you know, killing myself in a truck and stuffing my face. But, and it's just because, I mean, you see, I remember when I was in the 80s, you know, everything was aerobics. This will save your life.
I know. Then, hey, gotta cut you off. I gotta get to a break. I'm not disagreeing with you. We're going to talk more about that, though. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Ruth. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I want to make a couple more comments about what Adam just said, because he is on to something. There is no question. And here's, again, we can come back to an analogy of fuel mileage. For me, this one works really well. If I look at some of the things that I was doing and saying and talking about fuel mileage 20 years ago, I was wrong. And then, you know, you might say, well, if you were wrong then, how do you not know that you're wrong now? I don't. I don't know that everything I'm going to do or talk about on health is right. But the more I do this, and just like fuel mileage, yeah, I still don't have it perfect, not even close, but we've made huge improvements. Now, here's another analogy. In fuel mileage, there is a ton of junk science. There is a ton of snake oil. There are thousands of products that don't work. And so many people see that they give up. It doesn't mean there isn't a way. Health is the same thing. Yeah, what I thought was right on health 20, 30 years ago when I owned the gym, it wasn't right. It wasn't totally wrong, but there was a lot more, and it was more complicated. And over the years, I've learned and I've tried things. I've been a vegetarian. I've read all of those books. I've tried all of those diets, and I've learned a little bit along the way. And now I feel like I'm coming to a place in health the same way that I have in fuel mileage. I don't have all the answers, but I have some really simple things that can make a huge difference in people's lives, and I don't think that this is a fad. It will be a fad for some people. The gluten-free thing has been bastardized and screwed up so bad already. The paleo is going to, the same exact thing is going to happen to the whole idea behind paleo. That's one of the reasons why I don't even like to use those terms. When people say, well, are you paleo? No, not really. It kind of describes some of the ways I'm changing my lifestyle, but I hate to use the word because the marketers, the big money, the very same people who have screwed up our health, big agriculture, big food, and big pharmacology, big drug companies. Those are the three main characters that have screwed up our health and our fitness, and they are going to be the same ones because they have all the money. They will be the ones that will latch onto these words and create the fads. People will try what they think is the quick fix, and it won't work, and then they'll say, oh, that low-carb, paleo, that stuff doesn't work. It's snake oil. It's a fad. I tried it. It didn't work. They don't understand enough to know why it didn't work. Just like many people will try a fuel mileage improvement that we have proven thousands of times works, and they'll try it, and it won't work. And if I dig deep enough, I can show them exactly why it didn't work. But for them, it's all it will take. They'll just say, nope, I tried it. It didn't work. Nothing works. The vast majority of people are going to do that with health. They're going to try something. It's not going to work. They're going to give up. They're going to say it's garbage. I guarantee you I'm going to lose listeners over this. No question about it. I already have. I'll continue to lose more. I'm okay with that. I want whatever the number is, 2% of the industry, 2% of the population that is willing to try and fail and try and learn and fail and learn and keep doing that, not think, oh, there's a pill, oh, there's a supplement, oh, there's a quick fix, oh, damn, it didn't work, nothing works. Let's just give up and go back to our old lifestyle. I don't want the 98% of the population that think that way. I want the 2%. And if we end up with a very small show of healthy, rich people, I'd be very happy. And I mean rich in a lot of ways. Rich in relationships, rich in health, rich in giving back to the community, rich financially in all those ways. And that's what can happen when you do these kind of things and you do them right. And that's my mission. I'm going to keep doing that. So, Adam, I don't disagree with you at all. You are right for 98% of the people. That's what's going to happen. Let's go to Nevada. Vern, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Good day to you. Well, you know,
what's on your mind today?
I can walk through the truck stop now without stopping at the candy aisle, the ice cream aisle, and sadly, the Cinnabon kiosk. So,
boy, that Cinnabon is tough. You know, they have that whole aroma thing figured out. That stuff can make you crazy. Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Boy, is that a good one. The message in that one is just so powerful for anybody trying to run their own business at all. I mean, this is one I highly...
Yeah, you know what? I'm glad you brought that book up today, too, because that's what my whole open and what I just talked about requires really massive amounts of change. Change in the way you think, change in the way you do things, the way you shop, eat, buy, sleep, all kinds of things. And the whole message, as you know now, about Who Moved My Cheese is how to deal with and actually how to thrive on change.
That's right. Don't be afraid of it. Get ahead of it. Think about it while you're enjoying your cheese, as the book went. You know, when I first started listening to it, the opening lines of it, it sounds like a kid's story. I'm thinking, oh, great. I just wasted my money.
I know.
You know what? It's so powerful.
There's, you know, it is a kid's story.
There's two versions on Audible. One's got some actual discussion with the author. Costs a couple more bucks. That bucks is well worth it, too. So,
oh, you know, I've never heard that one. I might even go get that one because I haven't listened to it in a couple years. And if I'm going to listen to it again, I'd love to hear, you know, some excerpts from the author like that.
Right. He's got some scripted storytelling between some folks who have a made-up meeting. But
oh, yeah.
How he wrote the
very,
book, so,
very cool.
Very cool. So anyway,
Vern, you're breaking up. Hopefully, well, you certainly got your message across, but I think I might be losing you there. Great timing. That is a really good book for people who are listening to what I'm talking about with the health and many other things, not just the health. We're always changing things here and trying to find better ways to do things. But here's what that means. This is really good timing. Doing something better and trying to get better results means doing something different. I mean, we all know that. We've heard it a million times. You can't do the same thing and expect a different result. It's all about results. And if you want different results, you have to do different things. Different things mean change. People are afraid of change. No wonder why things don't get better for most people. So one of the first things you have to address is if you are afraid of change, you need to change that. This is a great book to do it. Who Moved My Cheese? I think the book's about 3 hours long in audio. Somebody will correct me, but it's not very long at all. And it is written like a children's story. It's like a fable. But remember fables? My God, didn't they have great lessons in them? We don't need 800 pages to learn something. We learned some really great lessons from short stories, parables, and fables, and that's the style of this book, Who Moved My Cheese? Super easy. I mean, it is, I'm not exaggerating, it is third grade reading, but it is a very powerful message. Thanks, Vern. Great timing on that one. Let's head off to Indiana. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hello. Hello.
Good afternoon. Yep, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I just was calling in to talk to you about the tire pressure monitoring system.
Okay. Tell me about it.
Oh, well, we just, you know, we've been running the TST. We originally bought it when we replaced our drive tires, and we bought one at a Petro, actually. They actually had one in stock, and we bought it, and we've initially put the system on, and some of the sensors didn't work. We've come to find out that when we ran into Dan, a lot of the sensors that we had were really old, and he swapped them out and gave us new ones, and we ended up buying a whole set to do all 18 positions, and we just really love it, and you know, it's been pretty bulletproof so far. And I like the peace of mind knowing what my tires are all the time, the temperature, the inflation. It's just a real neat thing to have.
Fantastic. Great feedback. Thanks for that. I appreciate it. Music's playing. I've got to get to a break. We come back. I've got to say about that. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, real quick, we're heading into the fourth segment here at the end. I'll say goodnight, goodbye, all those things. I've got to get out of here, but don't go away because we're going to come back and do another hour. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Chris was just talking about the tire pressure monitoring system. And this was one of those areas where we knew it was important. I think it is, it measures both tire pressure and temperature. And it was so important, it took us 4 years to come up with a partnership. We went through three full systems. We tested each system for a year, and it took us the fourth to finally come up with a product and a company that we wanted to partner with. So TST is the tire pressure monitoring system that we've partnered with. We love it for a lot of reasons. It's not available on our web store yet, but it will be very, very soon. We are working on that now. And really great product, good customer service. So that was one that, so far, that holds the record. Almost every company we partner with, the process is somewhere between a year and two. From the time we identify a need, find a company, do the research, spend some time with them, test things long term, it's usually about a year or two. You know, we just picked up the FlowBlow product. That was a 2 year. The tire pressure monitoring system was 4 years. Now, here's another example, BrakeSafe, one of our newest partnerships. I actually started talking to BrakeSafe about 6 years ago. May have even been a little longer than that. I think I was still in Colorado. But the problem was the product that they had back then, I loved it, but it was a little complicated and it was a little expensive. It was all electronic. And it just, after working with them, we decided not to do the official partnership, but I've always worked with them in the background. They helped me with a lot of brake education. But the Brake Safe product with the AeroLogger took that somewhat complicated electronic system and made it a very, very clean, simple, mechanical, visual system, and it's less than $170. That is available on our web store, and that is a killer product. That's like a 6 or 7 year. We've been talking with them in the background, and we finally made it an official partnership. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's head off to Wisconsin. Conrad, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I got a question, then I got a comment. Question is, I'm about to get the truck down to my local repair shop here, and I've got a brand new, just two road kink shocks that I'm going to take down and have them apply. Now, I just got a new set of steer tires, the Michelin ones I had before. I can't tell you if they're I can tell you if you want, but if they're the X, whatever, they worked out great the last time.
Yeah.
And pumps over here, spin balanced them and all that stuff. So I haven't replaced shocks on this truck since 2009 or 10, and I can't believe it's doing as well as it did. But lately, with the roads being what they are, I decided, God, I got to do something about the front end. I felt like I broke things in a lot of times in some of these potholes and stuff. So anyway, I ordered the Road Kings, and they're here. The only thought I had was, hey, if they're rebuildable at 300,000 miles, then I maybe better tell the shop not to destroy my shocks when they're taking them off, because I may want them to act as spares when I send the Road Kings in or something. So anyway, I'm just wondering if how to walk into this the right way and not forget something. What would you say?
You know, I'm glad you're thinking about it before you go down, but I think you've got it figured out. You know, just tell them, be as careful as possible. You know, don't destroy the shock. Now, once in a while, I've seen shocks that have just about welded themselves on, and you have no choice but to destroy them getting them off. So, you know, ask, say, can you be as careful as possible? Can we try not to destroy these? I do want them, 3 to 5 years from now, I'm going to come back. We're going to throw these on for a week while I, you know, get my new shocks. And now, you know, Road King doesn't rebuild anymore. They do, but what's going to happen is you're going to send yours back. They're going to send you a new set. That's the new program, which is even better. Yeah. But you'll still have a couple days downtime there. So if you can salvage, your shocks, that would be better. Or even if they can salvage a couple of them. Well, you're only doing two, you're doing the front. But if they salvage one, you know, if they're paying attention and they're able to salvage one, then you might only have to buy one spare. So,
okay.
And here's another thing you might want to do. You might want to ask them. If they destroy one of yours, you might want to ask, hey, have you guys pulled any used shocks off that you've got laying around that would fit my truck? They might.
Okay.
You know, or anytime you're in a shop from now on, if you only end up with one of yours, ask, hey, you guys got any used shocks around? And you could grab one because, like, who cares what condition it's in? You're only going to need it for a week at most. Other than that, I think they'll realize if they've never installed a set of these shocks. Have you opened up the box and held these things?
I peeked in there. They're pretty. I didn't go any further because I didn't want to deal with the styrofoam, but they're awful pretty. I was thinking, wow, I'm going to look like a race car or something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. They're like a mint.
They're like a mint green. I have to get my hands around them eventually here, but I didn't want them to be... I didn't want to make a mess in my truck, I guess. I don't know. With the cardboard and the styrofoam and all that stuff. But anyway, okay. Well, I'm going to do that. Guys, there's so much I'd like to talk to you about, but I know I don't want to take up your whole show, and I'm trying to figure out what would be the most important. And I think the most important comment I'd like to make about, I have to mention the brand name Volvos. I remember in the past you gave me the impression that dealing with warranties is a hopeless cause, and especially if you're trying to deal with a Volvo dealer. And my case was that my floor was, I was falling through my floor by the shifting lever. And it just, I wouldn't call it corrosion, it just kind of like cracked here and there. So anyway, I took it into one Volvo dealer in Texas, and he said, no, you don't have any warranty left on this truck. Your warranty fell off in 5 years. So I was in North Dakota, and I thought about the dealer I bought the truck from in Sauk Rapids, Minnesota, and I bobtailed 850 miles in March to go see these guys about maybe if I had a warranty left. And he looks it up, and he goes, yeah, you got a warranty. We'll take care of that. We'll take care of your doors, too. The doors are rusting out. And I never even considered getting the doors done because I just kind of looked at it. And it's a 2007 truck. And lo and behold, to make a long story short, I came out of there with somewhat of a $9,000-some-odd body repair that cost me $185 for my part of it. And it's so cool to have nice looking doors again. I just got done waxing my truck, and I'm starting to take pride in it again. But the thing is, the warranty had like 30 days left on it. It's an 8-year warranty. And any of the Volvo owners out there, don't forget about your rust and corrosion warranty. And if you go to the right dealer, they'll be more than happy to make it happen. And that dealer was Gator, of course. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they're like the center of the earth as far as I'm concerned. So anyway, so then anyway, in the same time, seeing I've tied up the whole month running back and forth and getting this done, I thought I better have the overhead looked at. I hadn't adjusted the valves for 300,000 miles. And I did this in, it was like March 25th. And my God, my truck, lady technician was like a master Volvo technician. Just a cute little pudgy gal, just worked on my truck. I couldn't believe this was happening, but anyway, she did a lot of things, but part of what she did was adjust I could read you the documentation, it's paragraphs long, but she adjusted the valves, did something around the turbo, replaced the gasket. It was a $2,600 repair. She replaced all four batteries and the connector to the batteries and everything. I don't know. I'm coming out of there with a truck that runs totally different. I couldn't believe it. And now I'm starting to see the number 8.24 in April popping up.
Wow.
And I'm just wondering if you can screw up these numbers somehow. If you could look at my fuel gauges, you'd see it March 30th is I did a partial, and then the first fuel up was like in April 7th. And I'm getting 6.44, but then I start bumping up to 7.85, 8.24. And my God, I'm looking now at a 9 30-day average. And
wow,
I'm lost. I mean, I can't believe how could I be getting this kind of mileage. There's even, when I bobtailed 999 miles, that was 10.72. I just wanted to bring that up. But to give you an idea of what can happen to owner-operators doing their own bookkeeping, I was in profit gauges, and I was ready to sell my truck. I mean, I just couldn't figure out, what am I going to do? I'm not making any money. And I'm not sure what happened, but somehow I started looking at these reports again. And I think what happened was that I decided to do the whole year over again manually off the COM data reports. And
I hate to do it to you, but this is the absolute end of the show. I got to wrap it up. Be safe, be profitable, do the hard work, and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right. Boy, I hate when I run into the end of the show like that. Damn clock. But we are going to do another hour, so get ready. Here we go.
In the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls. We answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, getting your authority, working with brokers, you name it, on and on and on. The show is really all about helping you be a better you, and we wrap it all around the trucking lifestyle. So I've been talking a lot lately in my opens, and today we're just going to jump right into some phone calls and see what it is you want to talk about. We're going to head off to California. Will, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. Been listening off and on for years, and I love the health topic because I'm in the 50-something range like a lot of us, and some of the things, having allergies and whatnot, putting me on some medications, that some of them seem might be counteracting my trying to do better. So I liked your attitude, the fuel gauge crossover link. I understand that. That makes a whole lot of sense. And then one quick question before I go and listen is, I've heard over the years off and on about a glider truck, and I'm just trying to wrap my head around what that is. And the sidebar is on your lift axles. There's a lot of lift axle action going on up in Oregon with all sorts of trucks, because four and five axle trucks are not uncommon in the state of Oregon.
Right. Yeah, the whole tri-state area up here, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, where they allow, you know, much higher weight limits with the correct number of axles, you're right. Now, there is a little bit of a difference in the trailer lift axles are pretty similar. The tractor lift axles, though, what you're seeing, because they are running four-axle tractors, not three-axle tractors. They're running four-axle tractors. Because that third axle is so far forward, that they make it a lift axle, but it has to be a steerable axle. So what happens is those wheels can actually turn and follow the road so we don't drag them and scrub them. And steerable axles have some inherent problems of their own. I'm not a huge fan of them, but they're necessary in that operation. That's what you have to do.
Right.
But you're right. A lot of lift axles going on up here. So let's talk about gliders, because I use the term, we talk about them all the time, and I get this question about once a month. So we know we always have new listeners or people who have been listening and haven't heard the explanation. A glider is a new truck. It comes off the exact same assembly line as any other new truck. So right now we're, you know, building, God, we're probably building 2016 gliders now, the way they do their dates. So we're building brand new gliders right now. If you were to walk into the factory at Freightliner or PACCAR and you saw new, you know, Cascadias coming down the assembly line, one of those trucks could be a full-blown, brand-new truck. When it comes off the assembly line, turn the key and drive it away. The one right behind it will be a glider. And the glider will have all the same stuff, except it will have no drive line. It won't have an engine. It won't have a transmission. And it may or may not have a rear suspension and drive axles. If it has a rear suspension and drive axles, it should be referred to as a rolling glider. We just tend to say glider. Some gliders, though, will come off the line with nothing but frame rails. And then you build the entire driveline, suspension, rear ends, the whole shot. So we could have a full glider. We could have a rolling glider. The reason we talk about them and the reason they are becoming so popular, gliders have been around forever. 30 years ago when I got into the industry, just about every dealer had a glider frame, cab, chassis sitting there waiting to be built, and they would typically use them in the case of a rollover. Or the bodies used to rust so bad back then, you kept the truck, the body fell apart, but you still had a, you know, an engine and a transmission. Then you would take it to a dealer, they would throw your driveline into a glider, and you'd drive off. Or you rolled one over, we take the drive line out, throw it in a glider, now we've got a truck. They were typically thought of as kind of substandard because dealers were only building, you know, one here and there, and they didn't take a lot of time on them. And so they were kind of thought of as just thrown together. And that was the reputation they had. The gliders of today are very different because we build them for a very different reason now. We build gliders today so that we can have a new truck with old engine technology, which is better. Our new engine technology just sucks. Not the base technology itself, all the emissions we've had to put on top of it that we haven't worked out all the problems yet. We will eventually, but we haven't. These engines are junk. I firmly believe that, and I don't think that is too strong of a word. Not all of them, but way too many of them, about 60% of all the new engines coming out, have major problems. So we can get a new truck, and it's some people would call it a loophole in the emission standards. Even though the truck might be a 2015, we only have to meet the emission standards of the engine we decide to put into it. So if we want to put a 1998 engine into a 2015 glider, the law allows us to do that, and all we have to meet are the emission standards from 1998.
Ah, okay. Makes sense.
So by the way, I'm in a 2015 Mac that's getting 7.3.
Here's the thing. I don't know if you feel like 7.3 is good or not. It's okay in my book. But honestly, with today's technology, our advances in aerodynamics, our advances in rolling resistance, our advances in engine oils and in rings and all, I mean, we've made electronics. We've made these amazing advancements. I had a truck in 1990 that got 7.6.
Right.
I mean, that's when I first started working on fuel economy. So to think that we've had 25 years of advancements, and I'm not criticizing you for this. A lot of people are happy with 7 right now. We're 7.5.
No, no.
And
well,
I'm saying, wait,
well, the other
wait,
the quick
ahead.
Thing is that this is the in-service average on this vehicle. It's a two-axle day cab that doesn't have a consistent load basis like some of your drivers are able to. So it goes from...
Hold on. I'm not going to let you use that as a kind of an excuse or a justification because we have guys doing 9-plus that not only do they pull different kinds of freight all the time, some of them actually pull different kinds of trailers from day to day. They might be pulling an open deck. They might be pulling a van. They might be pulling a reefer. They might be pulling some sort of crazy equipment trailer that is a giant pump and crane. So, yes, the freight will affect the fuel economy, but when we talk about a truck that gets 9.4 miles to the gallon, we're talking about a 30-day average or a 90-day right. average with lots and lots of variables. So 7.3, it's okay. It's okay when we compare it to the rest of the trucks on the road. I think it sucks when we compare it to the fact that I was able to do that 25 years ago. And so were a lot of other people. I wasn't the only guy doing it. I didn't invent this stuff. But with all of our advances, honestly, I think we should be getting 13 or 14 miles to the gallon. And it's because of all the emission junk that has stopped us from doing that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know. And see, the other part on this one is this is a slip seat truck, so it doesn't even have the same driver on a consistent basis. So all the different variables there.
Hold on. My truck back in the early 90s was a slip seat driver in the morning, driver at night. I was running a two different shifts at FedEx. Again, all those right. things matter. They do. Plus, let me throw out another one. I was pulling doubles and sometimes triples, and we lose 10% in fuel economy with doubles compared to a single trailer. 10%. That's huge.
And that's what we haul most of the time is doubles and sometimes triples.
So I have the exact setup that you were talking about. Two-axle day cab. The truck that I'm describing, actually the first one I did this was a two-axle sleeper. But
right.
same setup. Two-axle, slip seat, doubles, triples. And I was doing 7.5 plus back in the early 90s. We have not advanced fuel mileage anywhere near. Now, a lot of people, you know, that we know of have advanced fuel mileage tremendously. We're in the 9s and 10s. As an industry, we could have been in the 12s and 13s. I don't think 14 would have been out of the question if we would have focused on it and not had to deal with emissions. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get right back to some phone calls. Let's head off to Wisconsin. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing?
Good. What's on your mind today?
Well, I just wanted to talk to you about that, what you don't like to call the paleo diet.
Yeah.
Specifically, since attending the CMT this last May, I've tried to start adapting my diet to include much more healthy and naturally occurring food sources. And
okay.
It seems like it's not me. Everybody I talk to anymore, one thing leads to another, and before you know it, I'm describing to them what I've been doing. And by the way, the last 2.5 weeks, I've lost 8 pounds. And
excellent.
And so I've gotten on this kick where it seems like everybody I talk to, I end up talking to and describing his diet. So that leads me to, I've been talking to my girlfriend about it. You know, she's been working on losing some weight. She's had 2 kids, and she wants to lose some weight. And she's been doing it the old-fashioned way, counting calories and trying to keep an eye on what she's eating. And recently, she was talking with one of her doctors, and she brought up the whole idea of what I've been talking to her with the whole paleo diet. And he had one thing to say to her after he said, to confirm, basically, he said, well, basically like a caveman diet, right? She's like, well, I guess, yeah, kind of. And she, the one response he had to say about it was, well, caveman didn't live very long.
That's not true. That is a falsehood. It depends on where they lived. But there are a lot of other things that have screwed that number up. See, this is where the ignorance kicks in. Not knowing enough of the information. For example, I read a whole series of books that followed a couple archaeologists. It was a husband and wife team who studied the different tribes that inhabited North America specifically. So, you know, and they didn't move much then. They stayed pretty tight geographically. So they looked at, like, the tribes that inhabited the plains, the tribes that inhabited the southern west coast, kind of, the tribes that inhabited Florida, the Great Lakes, the Pacific Northwest. The closer they were to a coast, the longer they lived, by far. I mean, some amazing numbers. Like, some of the tribes in Florida, they documented that 60 and 70 years old was not unusual for those tribes. And when you start looking at the paleo diets and the recommendations, you start to get it. They ate more fish. Because it was available, they're on the coast, they're on the ocean, they have all these fish available. They ate more fruit. They ate fruit and vegetables year-round because of the climate. And they got a lot of sun-produced vitamin D. All of those things are really important factors. Now, if you lived in a tribe in Montana, think about this. You can't ship in fresh fruits and vegetables. You are living on primarily animal fat and preserved meats. They didn't really know how to preserve foods, you know, vegetables and fruits, so they went all winter without it. Not only that, they went without sunshine. They didn't have a real good source of vitamin D. So when you start to look at the real research into where people have lived and how they lived and compare it to their life cycles, their health, so he's just wrong. There were people long before civilization that lived very long, productive lives. Here's another issue, though. One of the things that we have dramatically improved, except in this country it's starting to get worse again, we have dramatically improved the survivability during childbirth. Childbirth is a very dangerous thing. And if you have a child, you know, out in the wild, which is what happened in paleo times, you were in a cave, you were in a hut, you were living out in the woods, think of all the dangers. The babies died, the mothers died. Now those numbers get used to calculate lifespan. But if you take that out, we find out that these people really did live a lot longer than we've been told that they lived. We have improved things like childbirth and survivability. So that would increase the numbers. But here's the other good news. Now that we know that that is a better way to eat and live, think of the advantage that we have. You know, some tribes that they've studied in South America were really healthy in some ways because they had access to more coconut products. Other tribes had access to raw chocolate and cacao, and I could go on and on and on. Well, the good news is now you and I, we have access to every single one of those foods from around the planet anytime we want it. So we should be able to take what we've learned about their lifestyle and why it was so healthy, combine it with modern technology that allows us to have all of those foods and live in places that are healthier. And, my God, we should be living to 100-plus healthy.
Yeah, and that was more or less the point that I was getting at with it. You know, I immediately rebutted with the comment that, well, we've dramatically improved the lifespan-limiting factors that the caveman didn't have the technologies in order to be able to overcome. And
exactly.
That
you are
existing.
And I only touched on a couple of things.
Yeah, and the whole point was that, you know, just I'm not suggesting, like I've heard you comment in the past, I'm not suggesting that I'm going to move out into the woods and sleep under the stars day in and day out, but I want to take more or less the best of all the information that I have available in order to make my life better, and I can't even comment. I mean, you already know, but I can't even come to terms with the vocabulary necessary to express the change in just my energy levels and how I feel. Just by, you know, more or less going grain-free, and I've cut almost all sugar out of my diet. I haven't had any grains in probably 3.5 weeks now. And, I mean, it's remarkable, the difference.
You want me to tell you something that'll get you even more excited? Because I know exactly what you're feeling. I know exactly what you're going through. And when I was feeling those things, I thought, my God, I can't say I feel like I did in my 20s because I didn't feel this good in my 20s. I've never felt this good in some ways. But here's the incredible thing. You're 3 weeks into it. I'm coming up on about 4 months, and it's still getting better, which is hard to imagine when you're at the point you are right now, because I remember being there thinking, wow, this is fantastic. 4 months later, it's still getting better.
Yeah, well, yesterday, I mean, she got up at 6 o'clock, I got up at 8 o'clock. She was at work all day. She works at a customer service desk at a grocery store, so she was on her feet all day. She came home and she was exhausted. I was working on the truck all day from 8 o'clock in the morning until she got home, and then she sat down next to me and started helping me. I was still up and raring to go long after I got done working on the truck, and she's about ready to pass out. I'm like, look at me. I said, I haven't even had breakfast yet by the time she got off work. And she's like,
right.
I don't know how you do it. I said, man, you just got to eat better. And then I ended up making dinner last night. It was a sliced lengthwise squash that I fried in a frying pan in butter and seasoned with some seasoning packet. And then had some smoked cooked beef and some celery, a couple of cheese cubes, and some cherry tomatoes to go with it.
Excellent. Yeah.
It's delicious.
Yeah, well,
and I know it's better for me than the crap I've been eating for the last 13 years.
Yep, absolutely. Hey, great feedback. Love talking about it. Love hearing results from people. I've done enough research to absolutely know this works. It's not perfect, doesn't work exactly the same way for everybody. We're still learning stuff. But I can tell you this is a huge change, and it's not hard the way people think it is going to be. In fact, it is. Once you get it, it is very enjoyable. You get to eat a lot of good food. Great stuff. I'm going to get to another call. Let's go to Texas. Sean, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I hit a milestone yesterday. I turned 40 years old. 40 years old, and I'm 47 pounds lighter since I was 39.
Outstanding. Hey. I love those kind of results.
Oh, yeah. Well, I started losing weight in January. I decided 39 and a half years of eating crap was enough. I'll spend the next 40 years changing my lifestyle. Also, this is the first time for a flatbed in Central Texas. Go ahead.
Hold that thought, because I just heard the music. We're going to get to a break. I'm going to come back. We're going to talk about that. You got a 10-year head start on me. I ate the wrong way for 50 years. But I'll tell you what, it doesn't matter. I don't care if you eat. I just read a story about a guy who was 79 years old who had all kinds of the normal health problems. He fixed his diet. He says he feels better than he ever has. It's amazing. It's never too late. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. A couple more things I want to throw in about the lifespan, what we've been told about people prior to modern civilization, that they suffered, that, you know, they died young. They did in some cases, but they did die young. I don't think they suffered. Now, they did during times of starvation, and that did happen. But it wasn't the norm. If it was the norm, we couldn't have survived for 2.5 million years and taken over the planet. It was part of the story, but that's the part we get told, as though civilization solved all those problems. I think prior to civilization, people were happier. I truly believe that now. But here are some of the things we've improved on. We could say people died young back then, but that was an average. And what skewed the average, it talked about childbirth and child mortality and infant mortality and the mother dying during childbirth. That's one factor. But the other factor was emergency medicine. You fell off a cliff and busted your head open, you were going to die. There was nobody to fix it and save your life. Sometimes just a broken bone and you would die. A simple infection could kill you back then. So, you know, now we have antibiotics, which, yes, could save your life from a massive infection, life-threatening, and instead we prescribe them every time somebody gets a sniffle and run to the doctor, and the antibiotics are part of, believe it or not, the obesity problem. Now, you're probably thinking, I've lost my mind. How could the antibiotics be part of obesity? It is. Absolutely is. Not just the antibiotics we take, all the antibiotics fed to the meat that we eat. Huge, huge part of the problem. So the lesson is we take what was good from prior to civilization, we combine it to the really amazing things we've done over the years, and I think it goes, our life and our happiness and our fitness and health could go beyond anything we think could be possible. I really believe it. Let's go to, back to the phones. We're going to go to Texas. Oh, no, hold on. I said I was going to go back to Texas to talk to Sean. Sean, go ahead.
Hey, Kevin. Yeah, one other milestone I hit. I'm officially 90 days over 8 miles per gallon pulling a flatbed.
Wow. That is an incredible number.
Well, I have to thank actually Vern, who's on your last show. He and I both work for the same company, and we have the same year, or his truck's a year older than mine, but same setup truck. He pulls reefer, I pull flatbed. So, sorry, Vern, I'm beating you on the fuel economy, and I have a flatbed, but it can be
there
done.
There you go.
And, but
that's
I
right.
talked to you 2 weeks ago about, I'm going to pull my emissions off the truck because I run this Texas, and I'm kind of having a problem deciding, do I want to just do the emissions and the tune, where PDI is telling me I need to pull out my compound turbo and go back to a single simple turbo setup. And I'm just kind of debating if I kind of want to do it in stages. You know, I'd rather spend $4,500 now and then, you know, later on if I want to upgrade the turbo, because their reasoning is you're going to make more horsepower, you're going to need to change your turbo. And I said, well, I understand that, but I'm only using 60 horsepower going 54 miles an hour. So,
what you really want, and I'm not knocking, you know, PDI or anybody else. I just don't know enough about them. I would get a second opinion on which turbo, because here's my thought on this. While you're doing this, I would change the turbo. I am in agreement with them that you are a very good candidate to go back to a simple turbo. Not a wastegated, not a variable geometry, a simple turbo. Because you're only running Texas, I would want to go with a larger turbo housing, not a bigger turbo, not more horsepower, just a bigger housing to allow more free airflow. Now, your turbo is going to spool up slower. You're going to give up possibly a little bit of throttle response, but I have a feeling all of the other changes are going to improve throttle response so much that the little bit of negative effect you'll have by the bigger turbo, you're not even going to notice. But yeah, we want to get a bigger housing.
I can take out the 07 emission CD15 with that compound system on it. So I'm
okay.
Because I heard that compound actually hurts fuel economy when you're using it properly. You know, when you're going slow, you actually lose fuel economy. It's only when you need the power is when you really benefit having the compound system. So I'm even thinking if this turbo dies tomorrow, I wonder if it's feasible to even go ahead and swap out the turbo and the exhaust manifold, even though I have the DPF on for the time being. I wonder if that would pick up a gain, because it seems like the new evolution Cascadia is, like in our fleet, they're up about 9/10 of a mile per gallon from the previous generation. And the only thing I can think of is little aerodynamics and because they went to that single turbo setup versus the compound. So if you have any listeners on the show that might have any information, I'm going to post this on MPG Masters, see what they think. Because I might go through diesel spec to get the tune, and then I might go through diesel or through PDI to buy the turbo and the exhaust manifold, unless Pittsburgh Power can recommend one. But I'm going to, obviously I got to be careful who I tell my information and where I'm going to post it. But I'll definitely, get this done soon in the next 6 months and share it, because you know what? I like a glider, but my company, they won't let me have one because of the California. Well, it's crazy to think about that because, I'm living in Austin, Texas. I'm not worrying about what someone in California thinks about my truck. Well, Kevin, thank you. You have a good weekend, and I appreciate the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call. Great feedback. Can't wait to hear your results. Love the numbers you're getting right now. And you know what? We all make decisions, and you like the carrier you're with, you like the way your operation is running, and you're making the new truck work. You're doing what you have to do. That's the way I think it should be. And people say, but Kevin, you tell people never to own one of these trucks. You're right. If somebody calls me and they're asking which one to buy, I'm going to give them my opinion. They can take my opinion. They can take somebody else's opinion. They can look at more information than they... Ultimately, everybody has to make their own decision. But I don't answer questions based on what I think somebody else wants to hear, what I think somebody else might want to do, base my answers on what I would do. It doesn't mean it's the only right way. It's my right way right now. It might change later when I get more information or new information or something changes. But it's certainly not the only way. There are lots of people who are succeeding doing things way different than what I talk about. Let's go to Texas. TJ, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Oh, I was listening to one of your 2010 podcasts this morning, and Bruce Mallison was on, talking about the Volvo D12 engine, which I happen to have, and I've never really heard you say one thing or another because I'm not that long time of a listener about these engines, but do you know if he still handles the manifold in the power box for these D12s, and if he doesn't, do you know anybody that does?
I think you could get a manifold because the way the manifold works is all we really have to do is buy a factory manifold, and then we can send it out to have it ported and coded. So that is the process is an aftermarket process, but we can do it on a factory manifold. So I don't think that would be a problem. The power box, you're going to have to call them because even power boxes that they used to have, they had to take off the market, and then they have to go through all of this EPA testing on each individual power box for each different configuration and each different engine and year. And the testing is expensive and time-consuming, and they're working through it. So I can't always keep track on, which one is available right now, but you could give them a call. And then there are a couple other companies around the country that have different fixes as far as uploads and ECM tweaks and tunes. I don't recommend anybody else. It's not to say that nobody else is doing things right. It's just to say that I don't have enough time to go research everybody to know that they're doing it right. And you can really, really screw up somebody's ECM and we can't see it. You know, it's not like I could walk into somebody's shop and say, hey, let me see your turbo. Let me see your manifold. Oh, I can see what you're doing. I like that. I can't do that with an ECM. I mean, it's so complicated. You have to get so deep into all these different settings, and I can't see them. So, again, it's not to say that there aren't other people doing it right. It's just that I can't possibly figure out who's doing it right. I have seen a lot of garbage in ECM, so I tell people be very, very careful who you deal with an ECM or a new flash to the ECM or whatever it might be. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'll talk a little bit about the D12 when I get back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to the calls. But before I do, I wanted to make a couple comments about the D12. You know, the D12 was an engine kind of like the Mercedes for me. When I first heard they were coming out, I had a lot of high hopes. And I'll tell you why. I had owned some Mercedes products, cars, and absolutely loved them. I mean, I loved the quality. I loved the engineering. So many things about them. So when I heard we were going to be able to buy a Mercedes engine, I was very excited. I was also very disappointed. It is one of the worst engines I've ever owned. I can't believe they screwed that engine up so bad. The Volvo for me was the same thing. I started buying Volvo trucks in the early 90s and loved the truck. And when I heard we could get a Volvo engine, I was so excited. And then I was horribly disappointed. That there is nothing about that engine that I really like. It's low on power. Fuel economy is tough to get out of it. It's hard to get parts for. Service is non-existent. So unfortunately, it's just not one of my favorite engines. Doesn't mean if you own one, you should set it on fire. You've got, kind of like I was saying earlier, you've got to make those decisions yourself. There are some things you can do to make it better. I don't think that the Volvo engine in most trucks is ever going to be a 9 mile per gallon engine. I haven't seen much evidence that would lead me to believe that would happen. Doesn't mean there aren't some exceptions, just not an engine that I would be interested in. Let's go to Georgia. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. How are you?
Great. What's on your mind today?
Couple weeks ago, you were on Kim's show, Destination Health, about four weeks ago, maybe. And I'm looking for that show on Let's Truck website, and I don't see anything. Do you know if I can find it anywhere else?
Yeah, if you go to, I'll try to figure out why that one didn't get posted, and we'll see what we can do. But if you go to blogtalkradio.com, that's where that's kind of our hosting platform. That's the number you call into. And all of the shows get recorded on their site as we do them. So if you go to blogtalkradio.com, search for Destination Health, the name of the show, and then you should be able, if you know the date, you should be able to look back through there and find it.
Well, I don't know. Are you usually on that show or every time or not?
I am on that show. No, not every time. I'm on that show maybe on average about once a month.
Okay. I look for it. Thank you for helping me.
You are welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Kentucky. Ken, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I've got
what's on your mind today?
I'm wondering about your rationale when you were driving 57 miles an hour. Why did you pick that speed rather than maybe a little bit slower speed because it's physics and you get fractionally better mileage.
Good question. And it's kind of a funny answer, actually. So let's go back to about 1990. I've got, at the time, if I remember right, I had two trucks with RPS back then, which became FedEx Ground. I had a couple trucks running local. I had a couple trucks running under my own authority. I had a couple trucks working for a Coke bottling plant. I had a freight brokerage. I had a mobile service truck. I was working about 22 hours a day and going broke. This is the time in my life that I learned a lot. It kind of turned me around because I almost went bankrupt. I made over $1 million that year and didn't keep any of it. I was living on credit cards. It was so bad. But I needed a new truck for my FedEx contract. And I was starting to think about how much the truck might affect my bottom line. Now, I didn't know much. But I just started looking around thinking, what could I be doing different? And since we were pulling doubles, I looked at all the other companies that pulled doubles, and I realized, hey, wait a minute. These guys all run single axles. Maybe that makes sense. I'd have to buy less tires. You know, it's shorter wheelbase, easier to maneuver. So I thought there's got to be some advantages to this. Less brakes, all that stuff. So I thought, I'm going to buy a single axle. If I'm going to pull doubles, I'm going to go buy a single axle. So I started looking around, and I wanted a sleeper because I didn't know exactly, you know, what I might be doing with it, and I didn't want to be stuck with a day cab. So I happened to find a truck that Swift, of all people, had specced out to pull doubles for one customer, and I think something happened with the contract. And they ended up selling these trucks, and they were less than a year old. And they were Volvos with 12-7 Detroits and direct drive gears, 264 gears, 10-speed transmissions, and they were all governed at 57 miles an hour. People were around in the early 90s. You'll remember that Swift used to run 57 miles an hour. And
slow wagon and fast traffic.
Yeah. So that's how these trucks were spec'd. So I bought one. I knew nothing about fuel mileage. I knew nothing about direct drive gears. I didn't think about going slow like a lot of people don't. I didn't think it would make that big of a difference. So I bought this truck, and I wasn't tracking fuel mileage, but I was tracking my accounting because I was going broke, and I had to figure out why I was going broke. So I'm looking at my accounting one day, like a couple weeks after I get this new truck, and I thought, one of my drivers must not be turning in his fuel receipts, because this truck spent like $1,000 less on fuel last month than all my other trucks. That can't be right. So I'm calling the drivers and saying, hey, I need all the fuel receipts. He's like, I gave you all the fuel receipts. I said, no, you couldn't have. And he said, I hardly ever put fuel in this truck. He said, I just don't need to. It had big tanks, so he was thinking it was just because of the big tanks. I had so much going on, I wasn't paying attention. So I started crunching the numbers, and all my other trucks were getting like mid-fives for fuel mileage. This truck was getting low sevens. The difference was tremendous. Now, the funny thing is right about that same time, I was moving my operation from Ohio to Florida. Now, Ohio was a 55-mile-an-hour state. So when the truck was governed at 57, I just left it that way because I used to get about one ticket a year in Ohio, you know, for going like 63 or 64. So I thought, you know what? It's 57. I'm going to leave it that way. I won't get tickets. I literally had the truck in the shop that week for some other things, and I had asked them to turn it up because I was moving to Florida. And I called them up, and I said, after I looked at the numbers, I said, don't turn it up. Leave it alone. And that was, so even when I moved to Florida and the speed limit was higher, I still ended up driving 57. And that was kind of how I stuck on that D7 number. And I drove that truck for a lot of miles, and it's just, I'm really comfortable right then. Now, I also got out of the truck, and I haven't really driven full-time since about 2000. With what I've learned since then, if I were back in the truck trying to make money out on the road, I would probably be driving 55 instead.
Okay. Okay. Well, I've got a 89 truck, Kenworth. I've gone through the whole thing. And I just, since April, I started on these really light loads, 8,000 pounds with a flatbed. And I got into the nines. And then I started really watching my boost gauge, like what Bruce would talk about, pre-accelerate for these hills. You know, so I'm running through Kentucky, and so I pre-accelerate. You know, I set the cruise at 55, but I, you know, get 2.5 pounds of boost, 5 pounds of boost to pull a hill. My 30-day average is 10.29. It's just,
wow.
I wouldn't have imagined it. You know, it wasn't even in the possibilities, you know. So, thanks for
that
your time.
Outstanding.
You know, you're one of the three that, you know, you, Bruce, and AJ, you know, really helped me a lot. So, thank you very much, Kevin.
You are welcome. Thanks for the feedback. And I know that was kind of a long-winded story about why I drive 57, but it's also kind of the story about how I got so interested in fuel mileage. I was just like everybody else. I was running up and down the road like a maniac, driving fast, trying to get all kinds of miles, didn't care about tires or speed or aerodynamics or any of that stuff. That truck was what turned me around. I saw the difference in numbers, and I saw the way to save my business. It's what got me where I am today. It's kind of crazy. I have to thank Swift. I'm all out of time. We'll see you back here next time. Be safe, be profitable, do the hard work, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Thanks for tuning in to The Audio Road. If you have any questions, give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. That's 855-800-3835. Check out the website at letstruck.com and find us on facebook.com/letstruck.